James chapter 5, verse 11. Behold, we count them happy which endure the affair of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tenderness. The affair, the patience of Job, and we know the end that the Lord worked out. Come back now to the book of Job, shall we? Chapter 1. In verses 1 to 5, we are introduced to the man. In verses 6 to 12, we are introduced to the council chamber of deity. Verses 14 to 19, 13 to 19, we read about the storms that broke upon his life. And in the last three verses of chapter 1, we have his response. Now later on we'll touch the second chapter, but just let me read you an extract, please, from chapter 1. Verse 6. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, Whence comest thou? Then Satan answered the Lord and said, From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth or shunneth or abstaineth from evil. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast thou not made a hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hand, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now, and touch all that he hath, and he will cast thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, all that he hath is in thine power, only upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. Verse 20. Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head, fell down upon the ground and worshipped, saying, Naked came I out of my mother's womb, naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Now you must keep your Bibles handy, please, for big things are before us tonight. You have heard of the patience of Job. God put this man into the crucible. The fire burned very hot. The waters ran very deep. Ultimately and finally, Job emerged having increased his knowledge of God and of himself, he'll be twice the man he was. The fact that so much space is devoted to him indicates the importance of what God has to teach us. The usual approach, quite biblical betimes, is that a man reaps as he sows. If you sin, you suffer. Unfortunately, that's not true here, for Job hadn't sinned. His three friends came along to share with him in his suffering, and stayed to criticize. In their straitjacket of theology, they could only see that if this man is suffering, he must have sinned. They were all wrong. That introduces me now, just for a moment, to teach you a little about chastening and discipline. The inspired writer to the Hebrews says, "Whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth." You'll learn two things from that verse. The first thing you'll learn is this: whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. But usually when we are in circumstances we don't like, we begin to question the fact about God's love. We say, if God loves us, why does he allow it? Yet the scriptures teach that he allows it because he loves you. Secondly, he scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. So this discipline comes because you are a son of God, not to make you one. Now, godly discipline takes three forms. First of all, it will take the form of retribution. You can suffer for your sin. Secondly, discipline can be preventative. That is, you are put into circumstances which can prevent you from sinning and make you a partaker of God's holiness. Thirdly, chastening can be educative. It can teach you about God and about yourself and about a thousand other things. Listen carefully now. Discipline can be retributive. You can suffer for your sin. The example is David. David suffered for his sin. You remember his sin? He committed adultery with Uriah the Hittite's wife Bathsheba. And he committed murder by proxy when he got others to kill her husband. God said to him, "The sword shall never depart from thine house." At the end of the road he says, "Although my house be not so with God." Never forget, David's family never went wrong till he went wrong. Got it? So you can suffer for sin. Chastening can be preventative. The example is Paul. 2 Corinthians 12, you remember? "Lest I should be exalted above measure, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure." Paul got the thorn to keep him steady. There's no saying what might have happened, but that thorn was prevented because of the abundance of the revelations to keep me humble. All of us invariably carry something we'd rather be without. That's the thing that keeps you in balance. Finally, in this connection, chastening can be educative. The example is Job. He came under the hand of God. Now, let me come again. Invariably, we connect suffering with sin, and we try in our minds to connect prior sin with present chastening. You can't do that with Job. You can't do it. Now, there's only one other way to look at it. to look at the circumstance in the light of the future and judge it in the light of the goal that is to be reached. Chastening for the present seemeth not joyous but grievous, but afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruits of righteousness. Got that? Afterward it yieldeth. The Lord said to his own in John 13, what I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Yes. Ye have heard of the patience of Job, and ye know the end of the law. So many a time you have to take into account circumstances and endeavor to view them in the light of the ultimate. You'll find oftentimes your friends won't help you. This man's friends didn't help. They came to offer sympathy and finished up attacking him. It never struck them that when a man or a woman's going through deep waters, it's compassion they need, not criticism. They need help. They don't need self-appointed judges to try and read the will of God for them. So here we come. And at the end, ye know the end of the law. At the end of it all, there's no detailed explanation about it all. The compensation was that he had a vision of God. I have seen thee. Ultimately, the vision of God at the end of it all will compensate. Make a man twice what he was before. The trouble is we don't like the road that God would educate us. Now what? In verses 1 to 5 we're introduced to this man, a wealthy farmer. He has everything that a man would want. Prosperous business, wife and family. There were occasions when his children held a party. And when they did so, Job gave himself to prayer. Just perchance, well, he was wise enough to know, just perchance they might not act the same when I'm not there as they do when I am there. Yeah. Got that? You parents listening? Don't be so foolish as to think that they might just always act the same way. He wasn't blind to the fault. He recognized he couldn't shelter them all the time. He realized at times it was better to pray than deny. That circumstances could be controlled by prayer. And so, whenever they held these social occasions, this man gave himself to offering and to prayer. Thus did Job continually. Are you listening to me? For this is the thing. This constant godliness, this praying about your family, is your only hope when the crisis comes. But if you're not living godly, you'll never survive. This is our trouble. We live sometimes as much without God as we can, and then when the trouble comes, we expect to get right through to God, and God to come in as if we had walked with him all the time. Have you got that? Godliness pays in the crisis. The crisis doesn't make the man who reveals him. Now, I read to you verses 6 to 12. I want to spend a little time on this. Now, before I begin to expound this, let me draw your attention to something. Whenever the storms hit this man, ultimately, he'll lose his business and his family. I want you to understand that sitting here tonight reading this, you know more than he knew when the storm broke. He didn't know what had taken place up there between God and Satan. We know that he did. Now keep that in mind. Because when it all happens, the heavens are silent. And he doesn't suspect that the devil is behind him. All he thinks about is what most godly men would think of women. Go
was allowed it. So he did. God allowed Satan to attack him. So in the end, this man will face it back to God. And that's what Satan thought he would do. Then he tried to undermine his confidence in God by saying, that's the kind of God you've got. You live to please him. You see what happens to you. Mind you, we've got the same idea that if we're going on with God, God must bless us materially. And it's all wrong. It's all wrong. Job could have thought that. In Old Testament days, that was the principle. But not now. Our blessings are spiritual, not material. Many godly folks never are well off by any means. Are you listening to me? Come again. Now, verses 6 to 12, you have this council chamber of deity. This angelic administrative assembly that meets from time to time. I haven't time to develop this, but that's what happens. And on this day, Satan appeared with the angels. Now, drop your eye, please, to verses 6 and 7. Now we're now going to listen to verses 6 to 12 to a conversation between God and Satan. Got that? And when Satan enters this assembly, God addresses him. And he says to him, here in verse 7, whence comest thou? And Satan replies, he says, from going to and fro on the earth and from walking up and down in it, all very vague. But people are always vague when they're up to no good. People are always evasive. Like Satan. Now please, very carefully now, follow me, will you? Verses 8 to 11. Verse 8, the challenge of God to Satan. Got that? The challenge of God to Satan. Verses 9 to 11, the challenge of Satan to God. Verse 12, divine permission, the permission of God to Satan. Got that? The challenge of God, verse 8. The challenge of Satan, 9 to 11. The permission of God, 12. Now, I bring you to this in order to give you the background to the deluge of sorrow that this man experienced. Verse 8. The Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in all the earth? A perfect and upright man, a man that feareth God and abstaineth from evil. And God draws Satan's attention to Job. Stop. Stop. Job doesn't know this. That what's going to happen to him now is because God boasted about him to Satan. God thought greatly of this man. And so he took the opportunity to draw Satan's attention to him. And that became the ground of Satan's attack upon him. I want to ask you something. Would you like God to boast about you? Come on. Would you like God to boast to Satan about you? Would you be able to face up to this? Well, you and I have had nothing like it. It's an extreme case because it's intended to cover every case. Ask thou, could God point us out? Now listen carefully. Point us out because in the ultimate, God's confidence is not so much resting in Job personally, but God's confidence is resting upon his work.
the soul of Job.
It's God's work in the man that will come through ultimately and take the man through, and God's confidence in his own work. Have you learned much of it, Lord? Wonder. I'm not asking you if you learned about God. Have you learned God? Could God have confidence in you to go through a trial until ultimately you're left with nothing but a naked faith in God? That faith will take you through when everything else is against you. Or have all these years been in vain, brother? And we've learned little or nothing. Oh, the times I've said it in Toronto this last 2 weeks. Christianity is not imposed from the outside. Christianity grows from the inside. You're renewed in your mind. You're changed inwardly. You're made different. Then the fruit of Christianity flows out. It's not imposed upon the outside. Now, I don't know where you come from, please. I'm not being critical. Is the brand of Christianity that you practice and what you've been taught is this? You don't do this, you don't do that, you don't do the next thing? That's legalism. If you never knew when they talked about legalism, that's legalism. They're putting you under law. You don't do this, you don't do that, you don't do the next thing. Now, why should they make the rules and regulations? I'll tell you. Simply because that these Christian features are not flowing out in your life. You haven't been changing inwardly, so you're not showing them outwardly. So they want to make you conform. So they give you the rules and regulations. It never accomplishes anything because you haven't been changed inside. Most of us are far too busy for God to have time to work inwardly. Have you got it? Now, this man had the light that you and I have got, but God had worked in him. And God has confidence in the man. So confident, he could boast to Satan about him. That's good. Now, please, drop your eye now to verses 9 to 11. Satan's answer, his challenge to God. Got that? Verse 9, he challenges God's estimate of Job. You don't think that he's serving you for nothing. Verse 10, he charges God with bribery. You've bribed the man. That's why he's got me. Verse 11, he dares God to remove the protection and let him at him, Satan at him. Have you got that? Verse 9, he challenges God's estimate. Verse 10, he charges God with bribery. Verse 11, he dares God to remove the seeming edge. Now we're coming, please, to deal with the psychology of Satan. These folks here, some of them here from Toronto, have known that time and again throughout the fortnight I've spoken about Bible psychology. Here's the psychology of Satan. This is the psychology of hell. And in some ways it's very sound psychology. The devil knows what he's about. Mind you, I'll point out in a moment, he's got his weaknesses and deficiencies. But he's interested in you. He wants to break your confidence in God when things go wrong. So, he says to God, you don't think really, do you, that this man's serving you for nothing? Doth Job fear God, fear you for nothing? He's challenging God's estimate. He says, you don't really think, do you, that this man fears you because of what you are in yourself? No. Now watch. Watch now. Satan is cynical. Cynicism is the essence of the satanic. Listen to me. The devil does not believe that there there is anything truly good. Neither the godliness of Job nor the generosity of God is cynical. I don't believe that this man does it because he loves you. Does it because of you yourself? Secondly, he's sneering. He's saying, listen, godliness is a way of gain. That's why the man's fearing. That's why he's going on with all this religion. Do you remember in 1 Timothy 6, Paul exposes the false teachers as thinking that godliness is a way of gain? That's at the very heart of clerisy. You'd be a man for preaching and godliness becomes a way of gain. No matter how godly he is, he's now contracting to serve God for so much money. Paying pastors are all wrong, just as wrong as ordained clergymen. Verse 10. Now he says, listen, you've bribed him. You've put a hedge around him. You've shut him in. More than that, you've prospered his business. Isn't that right? He says to him, thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. Look at his flocks and herds, his thousands of them. It's all bribery. It pays God Job to be godly. His godliness is a byproduct of prosperity. Now you listen to me. Because the challenge will be coming just in a minute or two. For maybe things mean more to our Christianity than we're prepared to admit. Oh, this is deep. This is deep. It's very challenging. So he challenges God. You see, if Job goes through and survives, it will vindicate Job, it will justify God. But if this man fails, then it will be proved that God had bribed him, and he only did it for what God gave him. So then the whole character of God is at stake, as well as Job. Oh yes. Oh yes. That's right. Now, watch now. Now I gave it the title Divine Permission, the Permission of God. Isn't that right? Satan is to acknowledge it. He says, put forth your hand and touch it. What he was meaning of this, you allow me to get at him and I'll show you different. You put forth your hand and touch all that he hath, the things, and he'll curse you to your face. That's the challenge. Remember, this Job didn't know anything about this. So Satan went out from the presence of God. Now, just allow me to draw you on your intelligence. You remember what happened now, don't you? Now, remember Job. Job is there, all unsuspecting. Hasn't a clue about what's going to happen. He doesn't know anything about the conversation. Just going about his daily business when suddenly a messenger arrives. The Sabaeans, marauding bands, have come. They've taken all the animals and slain all the young men except me. That was a natural hazard. Marauding bands. He's no sooner said it, Job began to wonder, say, well, after all, I suppose this sort of thing happens, when suddenly a second messenger comes running. And he says, lightning came, the fire of God struck. The oxen and all are gone. The men have been killed, and I only am left. What's this? An act of God. You couldn't foresee that, could you? See how clever Satan is? And he's... You can understand how it's affecting this man. That's nearly half, three quarters of my business gone.
And suddenly another man comes running. And he says, the Chaldeans came, desert brigands. And he says, they've taken all the camels. The men are dead, I only am left. So his whole business has collapsed. Another man's coming. He arrives, he says, there came a great wind, a tempest, a cyclone from the wilderness. Man was gone. Ten. The men are dead, I only am left. So his whole business has collapsed. Another man's coming. He arrives, he says, there came a great wind, a tempest, a cyclone from the wilderness. Man was gone. Ten. Now, I don't know how long was between the messengers. If there was time between, then there he is wondering what's all happened, unsuspecting about God or the devil. Maybe thinking, well, why does God allow it? And suddenly he's hit again. It's time just to assimilate it and take it in, they hit again. Or if they came rapidly, 1, 2, 3, 4. His world crashes about his feet. He's lost his business. He's lost his family, not one by one over a number of years, 10 of them, just like that, and they're all gone. In a moment or so, he's been reduced from a millionaire to a pauper. You can hardly take it in. Hardly take it in. Satan's buffeting. Satan's attacking his mind. He wants to destroy his confidence. He wants to raise bitterness in his soul. He wants to turn him away from God. He wants him to curse God and not bless. He's mugging him. Mugging him. Battering him. Pummeling him. I hardly think a man could have taken him on. How will he react? Heaven and hell's watching. Heaven and hell's watching. I want to tell you something. How you react in circumstances similar can either be an encouragement or a discouragement to other people. If you can trust God, when everything's against you, people will take note. It's easy to trust God when things go well. Nearly anybody could do that. You see, Satan's psychology was this. Maybe it's very sound. A man's faith can only be seen by testing. It was quite something, wasn't it? You've surrounded them with everything. You've blessed them. You've sheltered them. You've hedged them in. It's all right, you boasted. Mind you, I know God knew all about the inside. You were boasting about this man. He's never been tested. Let's test him and see. All right, says God, on you go. And you see, Satan can make mistakes. He's not divine. He's only a created being. Satan can make mistakes. It had never occurred to Satan about the work of God in a man or a woman's soul that could survive this. It had never occurred to him that the crisis might reveal the man in a way that he never thought about. That Job has become the battlefield, the battleground between God and Satan. Drop your eye now, please. Now, just a minute now. You know about what happened? Job arose and worshipped him. You stop a minute. Stop. Listen to me. Supposing you lost everything, how would you react? Now let's suppose now that the business collapsed. Whatever it was. Supposing that you had to sell your house, or houses, I'm not being critical. Supposing you had to sell your car, or your cars. God reduced you till you had nothing. a series of loads. And you had either to go down, I think, to what you call the welfare, or you now have to be dependent on the brethren. Would you be as devoted the week after as before? Would you be up in the Lord's day morning and through the week on your feet blessing God? Or is it possibly true that as far as you and I are concerned, Satan is right, things mean more to us and to our Christianity than we're prepared to admit? Would a man love God just for himself? Would a man say, fear God for nothing? God says yes. The devil says no. What do you think? Come on, what do you think? Just you ponder that. I'm not denying you your comfort. I covet neither your money nor your wardrobe, nor your homes. I'm only saying, does that take a much bigger place in your life than you're prepared to admit? Do you love God for what he is, what he gives? Now look now, please, verse 20. He arose. How will he react? Yes. Heaven and hell is watching. He arose, rent his mantle, shaved his hair, fell down upon the ground. So, if you care to drop your eye to verse 5, you'll find this man's devotion while his children were having good times. And it says, when it tells you about his offering and his prayer, thus did Job continually, lest perchance of sin. Thus did Job continually, and when the storm came and broke and he's lost everything, he's still worshipping. He's still praying. His godliness and consistency had enabled him to contain the experience. He was able to hold it in perspective because of the discipline of his inner life. He'll still pray and watch it. That's what you hold to. Do you practice it? You read your Bible? Come on now, have you read it today? Listen to me. No one in this building is spiritual enough to leave the house any morning without reading and praying. Now, you're not spiritual enough for that. You might think you are. You take my advice. You read a verse in the morning and you can meditate upon and with time through the day. It only becomes food to your soul when you meditate on it and think about it. Right? Thus did Job continue. Daniel will, when the crisis comes, open his window as he did aforetime. Have you got it? Godliness will preserve you. Come again. Verse 21. Now listen to his reaction. What does he think about it all? Naked came I out of my mother's womb. Naked shall I return thither. How true. How true. Listen to Paul, 1 Timothy 6. You brought nothing into the world. It is certain you'll take nothing out. All that you've amassed is only luggage. You'll need to leave it behind. You used to say in the old country, there's no pockets in the shroud. You may say, this is none of my business. Now, you're quite entitled to make your judgment upon me and what I say, please. You're quite free to do that. I want to tell you that I believe there's a day of account coming for many Christians who have left their money to their family and relatives that squandered it. Money that God gave them. The family spent it in a way that you would never have spent and God never intended it to be spent. First Timothy 6 tells you to invest it in a way that you'll meet it up there and get the return on it. The Lord came.
That would be right, wouldn't it?
We would all acknowledge what we have. The Lord gave. He's the right to give. We received it.
So, the Lord hath taken away the same right to take his gift from them. Is that the name? Watch now.
Blessed be the name of the Lord. Satan says, take the things away and they'll curse you. Not bless you. But no, the man's blessing God.
Thus, Job sin not, nor charge God foolishly. Way in the distance, maybe you wouldn't hear it, way in the distance there are three cheers in heaven. The first one has gone to God, but it's only halfway. Chapter 2, please, won't you? Verse 2, Satan's arrived again. Sons of God. The Lord says to him, from when comest thou? He gives the same answer. He says nothing about his failure. All right? He says nothing about his failure. To all the other folks. All right? Hover around life. All right? Solicitors, doctors, the Lord, you only hear about the successes. You never hear about the failures. Satan's not mentioning the failure. He never mentions it. Now, but God says to him, just a minute. Hast thou not considered my servant Job? Well, it's a good job. That's funny. A good job Job didn't, you know, wasn't it? You could say, no, Lord, listen, I've had about enough. I can't take any more. Says God, hast not thou considered my servant Job? None like him in the earth, perfect and upright man, feareth God, abstaineth from evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. He won't talk about his failure, but God will. Says, do you see him? He's still there. He's still the same man. Well, that's good. That's good. When circumstances don't change a man. Now, let's read this conversation. Listen again now. They say satanic psychology. This is quite an education, isn't it? Listen to him now. He says, verse 4, skin for skin, all that a man hath will he give for his wife. Put forth thine hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will cast thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, he is in thine hand, but save his life. Got that? Now watch. Here's the next conversation. Now here is the second line of satanic psychology. Says the devil to him, listen, skin for skin. All a man hath will be good for his life. Now I reckon he's quoting some proverb. It's not known to you and I, skin for skin. I don't know the background of the proverb, but I think I know what it means. Skin for skin. All that a man hath will be good for his life. I think what he's saying is this now, just a minute now. We've pierced the first skin. Two skin deal. We've pierced the first skin of things. Now I admit, she's saying, I admit. I'm surprised. I didn't think he would come through. Let's pierce the second skin. And let's get at the man himself. Let's get at him. Let us get at his bones and his flesh. Let's touch his body. See, if he won't curse thee to thy face, all right, says the Lord. That means, would you allow me to give you a little insight into what this man suffered physically? What Satan put him through in that place, will you? Chapter 2 here, verse 7. He went forth, Satan, from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the side of his sole of his foot till the crown of his head. And Job took him a potsherd to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes. Notice two things. Verse 7, boils, inflamed eruptions. Got that? Verse 8, intense itching. Got that? Boils all over, inflamed eruptions. Terrible itch in the skin. You ever seen someone talk to you about that? And now to chapter 7, will you? Verse 3 and 4. Close of the verse. Wearisome nights are appointed to me. When I lie down, I say, when shall I rise and the night be gone? I'm full of tossing to and fro until the dawning of the day. Have you got that? Long, sleepless nights. Verse 5. My flesh is clothed with worms and clods of dust. My skin is broken and become loathsome. Have you got it? Maggots in ulcers. Verse 14. Then thou scarest me with dreams and terrifiest me through visions. Nightmares. Nightmares. Come now right over, please, to chapter 30, will you? Verse 17. My bones are pierced in me in the night season. My sinews take no rest. The erosion of bones. Verse 27. My bowels boil and rested not. The days of affliction prevented me. Intestinal discomfort. Verse 13. My skin is black upon me. My bones are burned with heat. The blackening and peeling of the skin. A burning fever. Can you put all that together? That's what this man was suffering. That leaves. Back now to chapter 2, will you? Verse 9. Then said his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. But he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this did not Job sin with his lips? In the end, his wife turns against him. She's lost her faith. Now, hold on. I don't hold any brief for Job's wife. Is that clear? I want to say this in clear. I want you to notice that she never broke down when the business failed and the family was taken. She only seemed to break when the hand of God seemed to touch him. She broke completely. Not many would have gone through so much, but in the end she broke down. She had given up her faith and she wanted him to give up his curse God and die. God's forsaken me. Oh no. You know, there was a sense in which Job went through experiences and no doubt in his soul he's saying, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? But God hadn't. Now his wife was turned against him. She must have had a very insensitive spirit that could have spit out vicious words like this. In the day when they needed her most, she turned her back. He says, you speak with some of the ungodly. See, as she began to realize she was no longer lady of the manor, was all this going to be a big embarrassment to her? She had lost her social status and respect. Curse God and die. I couldn't have it come to a close. When you get to the end of the chapter, right away, chapter 42, we are told about the end of it all. Verse 5, I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee.
You know, God had taken them through the universe. He had shown them the sovereignty and might and majesty and creatorial glory of deity. Showed them all that.
The thing that brought Job to his knees was the vision of God. I have seen thee. I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now I see clearly. I see it all. Brethren, there's a road that leads to God. It explains everything.
In the end, God will condemn his three friends. Is that right?
He'll address them. He says, my wrath is kindled against you.
You didn't speak right about me as did my servant Job.
Now he says, listen. Where you go, he says. He says, Job will pray for you. Bring your offering. Then the Lord turned the captivity of Job and did twice what he had before.
Say, you might never be called to go through this in its uttermost extremity. But when the time comes and things begin to run against you, what now? Will you be no better than the ungodly, the way they react in the stoicism? Or will you bow to bless the God that has proved so faithful before and remains immutably the same? Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today. The same in the yesterday of experience, the today of necessity, the tomorrow of expectation, the same! Immutable, unchanging God in Christ.
Listen to this man.
Though he slay me, yet will I trust him.
I don't care what he does to me, I'll still trust him. Is that right, Bill?
Come on, sister.
Will you trust him to the bitter end and never be bitter in your soul?
He knoweth the way that I take. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold.
How did God feel about it all? You had to wait centuries to know about it. James tells you. You have heard of the patience of Job, and you have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is pitiful and the tenderness. Oh, how God felt that. But it was God that put him in it.
Is that right? And in the midst of all the disconcerting process, you see, if Job had sinned, he could have repented. If this had been a crisis in the family, he could cope. You've had to cope with that. Isn't that right? Something to be cope, to cope with it. You might have a few sleepless nights even with a assembly problem, but you can cope. But when a man knows he's in an experience and he has not sinned, and he's going through the mill and he knows that everybody thinks he has done something wrong, brothers and sisters, that is solitary agony.
Solitary agony. Peter tells you, if you suffer and you're wrongdoing, but remember, when you suffer and you haven't done wrong, that's the road of Christ. That's the road of Calvary. Just to trust him. Him that God blesses is our good.
And unblessed good is ill. And all is right that seems most wrong.
It's sweeter.
My brethren, you have heard of the patience of the Lord, and you have seen the end of the Lord,
that the Lord